And welcome to Merkwood Design's Adventures in Creativity. I'm your host, Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zeroff, and this is podcast number 10. This series also has an accompanying website with show notes, links, patterns, and projects. Just head over to merkwooddesigns.com, that's MIRKWOODDESIGNS.com. The theme for today's podcast in honor of St. Valentine's Day is love stories. Each of the segments has something to do with hearts or love. From a Valentine-inspired wall quilt to luscious truffles you can make for your own Valentine, including pretty boxes to put them in. In the grab bag, I'll share a couple of true love stories that I have witnessed firsthand, and I'll also share the most beautiful love song that I know. The bumper music for today's podcast is a song called The Dutchman, which is by American singer-songwriter Michael Peter Smith, and it is used with permission by his publisher. In the grab bag, I will sing the song, which is one of the most beautiful love songs I have ever heard, and I really think you'll agree with me. I'll talk more about that in the grab bag. If you follow my blog, you know that I have discovered the joys of custom fabric printing. I found this really terrific online resource called Spoonflower. The link will be on my blog, but it's just spoonflower.com. Basically, you design a picture yourself and you make it into a GIF file, a JPEG. I think they also accept PNG files and maybe some other formats. But then you upload it to their website and with a click of a few buttons, you have designed your own fabric. It's really easy to do. So if you think you want to do this and you go to their website, the instructions are very clear, very fast, very easy. And the cool thing is you can print on a variety of fabrics, including cotton quilt weight, which I think I read somewhere is actually Moda cotton, so you know it's pretty good quality. I ordered a piece, a fat quarter of one of my designs, and it's definitely good quality quilt fabric. Cotton sateen, which is a beautiful fabric with a sheen, but it's 100% cotton. Cotton knit, which, you know, you could think of a really cute design for a summer dress out of cotton knit. Just think of what you could do with that. There is a beautiful bamboo blend. I think it's bamboo, rayon, and cotton. I ordered a whole bunch of it, and I made that shirt. If you looked at my blog, the shirt is made out of this fabric. I swear, it feels exactly like silk. It is so soft. It is the most beautiful fabric, and that's that bamboo blend. They also have upholstery weight and canvas weight fabrics. Really, think of the possibilities. You can design fabrics for quilts, clothing, pillows, bags, purses, reupholstering furniture, even pictures to frame. A lot of the designers sell their fabric and or the stuff they've made on their own sites or on Etsy, which is a site for handmade stuff. If you grant Spoonflower the rights, they'll sell your fabric for you and you get a percentage of the sale price. So I think you should give it a try. You know you've always wanted to design your own fabric line, right? And now you can. I've posted photos of the two Alice in Wonderland fabrics that I designed on my blog, along with a link to Spoonflower and to Etsy. This podcast's Alice in Wonderland red work is my absolute favorite image from the Alice books. It is Alice holding the flamingo. If you're not familiar with the story of Alice in Wonderland, in one chapter she is playing croquet with the Queen of Hearts, and instead of regular croquet mallets and balls, they're playing with flamingos as the mallets and hedgehogs as the balls. Years ago, I used to have a stained glass design studio, and I published a book of Alice in Wonderland glass panels that I designed based on the Tanyella illustrations. The image of Alice holding the flamingo was my signature piece, and it also served as my company's logo. And I'm thinking I might pull out my glass and my tools and get back to that hobby during the summer when I can work outside. Right now, there's just not enough room in my house to set up the glass studio. Years ago, I actually had the glass studio in the room that's now my son's bedroom. And you know, having a glass studio in a room with carpet is not a good idea. you have little tiny pieces of glass all over the place. And I'm not talking about pieces of glass you can see with your eyes, but I'm talking about when you cut the glass, teeny tiny minuscule pieces work their way into everything. And if it's in carpet and you're walking around barefoot, that is not a good thing. And also, of course, when you're working with stained glass, you're also dealing with a soldering iron and hot lead or hot tin. And if that falls on your foot or gets on the carpet, that's not a good thing either. Anyway, so I do have a separate building on our property that actually is my studio, and it started out as my stained glass studio, but you know how things like that happen. It sort of started accumulating other stuff, including a lot of my husband's stuff. So what I think I need to do, maybe this summer I'll make it a goal to get my studio cleaned out, get it working again, make sure my lights are working, and I might open my stained glass business again. Well, maybe not as a business, but get back to it for the joy of it. I think when I had it as a business, it just got overwhelming and it was no longer a joy anymore. And when that happens, you lose interest in a hobby that you've made a business. That's my personal experience. It's happened with a number of different things I've tried in my life. Anyway, there's a link to the Alice and Flamingo Red Work on my website at mirkwooddesigns.com, and feel free to download that. And I'd like you to share the picture with me when you get it done. I'm finally back to knitting after being burnt out around Christmas. Right now I'm making myself a beautiful lime green wool scarf using the seafoam pattern, which has become my very favorite because it's not only really pretty, but it's also really easy for a beginner. And as you know, I'm a beginner. The pattern goes so quickly, it's just amazing. You can have a scarf done in very little amount of time. I found this pattern on Ravelry, the knitting and crocheting website. I've put a link to the pattern on my blog. I'm still pretty new to Ravelry, but I'll tell you, it's a terrific resource, especially for new crocheters and knitters like me. Check it out if you haven't already. Again, there's a link to the pattern on Ravelry and also a link to Ravelry itself on the blog. And since last podcast, I've been making cool pin cushions using my shell collection. If you read my blog, you've already seen photos of a few of them. I'm making pincushions a topic in an upcoming podcast, and I plan to provide patterns for several different types. On my blog, you'll see a photo of just of the few pincushions I've made to whet your appetite, and I want to stress, this is just a few of them. I don't think you can have too many pincushions. Well, maybe you can. They're in every room in my house. But the cool thing is, because I'm a sewer, and you know how it is when we sew, we tend to leave trails of little things all over the house, including pins, including needles. When I have pin cushions in every room, if my husband sees a pin or a needle, the first thing he does is he picks it up and sticks it in the closest pin cushion. So that's kind of a good way of keeping track of things. Also, if you follow my blog, you know that I shared my secret shame recently by posting before and after photos of my sewing room. At Christmas time, I kind of let things get out of control and stuff just piled up all over the place in my sewing room, especially on my cutting table, which is normally kept absolutely clean except for the current project I might have laid out. I still do need to sort through 3 bins of fabric and decide what to keep and what to donate to my prayer shawl ministry at church, but right now I can actually see the cutting table. It's funny, my sister Pat, when she first saw the photos of my before pictures, she said, "I nearly had a heart attack when I saw those pictures. I couldn't even see your sewing machine." And she's absolutely right. My sisters keep these pristine, gorgeous houses. And, well, you know, when they hear this podcast, they'll snicker because I know that both of them say, "Oh, I don't dust enough." Okay, well, I'll be frank. I don't dust at all. Well, I dust when important people are coming over, but for the most part, I kind of consider everything in my house to have that certain velvet look. That's what I call it, the velvet look. Actually, it's not that bad, but having cats, you know how fur sometimes kind of builds up on things. I try to keep it neat, but it's hard to do, especially when I'd rather be doing something like sewing or crafting or podcasting. Anyway, I ran across a couple of quotes recently that I would like to share with you. The first one is from a movie I was watching idly recently. It's a silly comedy called Yes Man, and it stars Jim Carrey and Zooey Deschanel, who is fast becoming one of my favorite actresses because she's just so unusual. Not only her looks are unusual, but her style of acting. She's not your ordinary, you know, pretty girl actress. She and her sister Emily, who stars on the TV show Bones, have the most incredible eyes. Anyway, so I digress. So in the movie, Yes Man, Zooey Deschanel's character Allison says to Jim Carrey's character Carl, "The world's a playground. You know that when you're a kid, but somewhere along the way, everyone forgets it." That is absolutely the truth. Remember when we were kids, how everything was new and exciting and, yes, a little scary, but usually that didn't stop us from trying new stuff all the time, whether it was jumping in puddles, playing in mud, or swinging so high on a swing set that we felt we could go right over the top, and maybe some of us did. And we were always so excited to try any new kind of art project or hobby. We were open to everything. Basically, we always said yes. True, sometimes we got into trouble or we got hurt, but we also learned and we grew. Now that we're adults, it seems that we're fearful of trying new things, worried that we'll make mistakes or maybe make a fool out of ourselves. Recently, Darla of the podcast The Scientific Quilter talked about this very subject, fear. You know, we need to get over it and relearn that the world is a playground. There's so much wonderful, exciting, dazzling, and awesome beauty out there. It's just waiting for us to explore. So, go play. I'll share that my biggest creative fear is actually brought about by reading quilting magazines. I look at every issue of magazines like American Quilter and Quilter's Newsletter, and I'm really intimidated by the quilts that I see. Every color choice is perfect, every point meets, every stitch is tiny and accurate. My own quilts are nothing like what I see in magazines. You know, I began to compare myself with the work in the magazines, which is not a good thing. And for a long time, I was almost paralyzed by this intimidation, and I stopped quilting. Finally, I learned to get over that fear, and I'm quilting again, not only because I'm expressing my own unique creativity, but because it's fun. And that brings me to the next quote I wanted to share, but it requires a little bit of background. The other quote I wanted to talk about was something I ran across a few weeks ago. I'm the librarian for my quilt guild in Ann Arbor, and often members donate books and patterns that have to be cataloged. At January's meeting, a lot of people donated books, including one longtime member who presented me with this huge carton of books and magazines and other stuff, and she said, "Do whatever you want with this." A cursory look told me that most of it will end up at the guild's garage sale this summer. The proceeds go to a charity. But some of the books will become part of the guild's huge library. There were also several old magazines, old quilting magazines, and it was really amusing to read through them. My, have quilting trends changed in the 25 years since these magazines were published. Nearly all of the quilts in them were made using high loft batting, and you know, you so rarely see high loft batting in quilts anymore. One of the magazines in the box was the February 1984 issue of Quilter's Newsletter, a magazine to which I currently subscribe. The column Loose Threads by the late Helen Kelly was just really terrific, and it applies not only to quilting, but to every aspect of our creative lives. It's kind of a long quote, and I'll actually have the actual entire column on my website, but I'll read it now because I really wanted to share it with you. I actually set it aside just to make sure that my podcast listeners would get to hear her words. Here it goes. "Quilters spend a lot of time justifying the fact that they would rather quilt than do housework. I will admit that house cleaning is at the rock bottom of my priority list. I'd better be honest with myself and everyone else. At my house, if I am going to savor the joys of quilting, dirt won't hurt and dust is a must." There is something almost mystical about seeing something you have conceived in your own mind flowing from your fingers. And after all the work, there comes the satisfaction of having a thing that is a joy to behold and glorious to touch. Don't ever measure yourself by what the next person is doing. Whatever his speed or ability or vision, it has nothing to do with you. What does have to do with you is that you fulfill your vision in your own way. The only measure that is important is that you do the best you can. It is a terrible waste of your own time, and it is self-deprecating to settle for less. If you take the joyful times and mix them with a little of the irritating things and the things that require determination and stubbornness, and if you put all of that into your work, you get a self-portrait. Next time you look at someone's work, let it make you wonder what it is telling you about the maker. I have enormous respect for the old. Maybe you'd even call it a reverence. Those gals here in America were really terrific, you know. Everything I do starts out with the old. Old fabrics, old designs, old techniques. Somehow, in the process, I begin to see new things in them. How we use what we already know and combine it with new ideas says something about ourselves as individuals. That's the exciting thing about exploring. There is something about creative needlewomen that is comforting. They use their minds. They have the courage to try something they haven't done before. They get a delight from it, and they laugh a lot. They almost always have a wonderful sense of humor. And that's the end of Helen's article. Again, I've put that column on my blog if you want to read it again. Oh, I wanted to remind you that there is now a reward for photos of stuff that you have made using my patterns, tutorials, templates, or recipes. I've already given away two rewards, and the recipients are pleased. Thanks to Lisa and Darla for their photos. Check out my blog, mirkwooddesigns.com, for a link to the gallery. And there's also a link on the right-hand side of the blog that will always be there. Right now, there's a big, huge reward sign, so I encourage you to go check it out. Stay tuned for the Fiber Arts segment. Today, I am presenting my Valentine's Day Friendship Braid Wall Quilt, and I've got a couple of tutorials to help you complete it. Welcome back. I'm Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zaroff, and you're listening to Mirkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. This is the Fiber Arts segment. Today, I'm going to tell you how to make a pretty Valentine's Day wall hanging using a very easy pattern called Friendship Braid. I've also seen it called French braid, and it does kind of look the way when I used to have hair down to my waist, I would always braid my hair and I'd use a French braid. So that's kind of what the design looks like. This is one of those patterns that you can make as large or as small as you want, sort of like flying geese. You just keep adding more geese. Well, in this case, you just keep adding more braids. You can keep adding on to the length by adding more braid pieces, or you can add as many rows as you'd like. Once you get each row done, just say, how wide do I want this quilt? Just keep adding more rows. My wall hanging is 22 by 34 inches, including the checkerboard border, and the fabric I used for the center of the quilt was from a Moda charm pack called Candy Kisses, designed by Sandy Gervais. I used the entire charm pack with the exception of a lot of little triangles that were left over, but save those triangles, I know you'll find a good use for them. I really liked using this charm pack when I saw it at my Quilt Guild meeting a couple weeks ago. They always have a vendor, and she had a lot of Valentine's themed fabrics, and when I saw this, I said, I'm going to buy this charm pack. That was my inspiration for my project, my fiber arts project for this podcast. So thanks to the vendor at my Quilt Guild. Now, as far as the braid portion of the quilt, I'm using the same pattern for the prayer shawl I'm working on. I'm making that out of batiks that my sister-in-law Michelle sent me, and it's really turning out beautifully. I got distracted by creating the projects for this podcast, so I'm not quite done with my prayer shawl, but it will be done by the next meeting, which is the second Saturday in February, and I'll make sure I take pictures of it because I'm so proud of it. You can make the pieces of the braid as wide as you want. The single thing you need to remember is that the end needs to be a 45 degree angle for it to match correctly. And if you look at my project sheet, you'll understand what I mean. There's two pieces of the braid, and they're identical in shape, but one is a right and one is a left, and that's very essential if you're using fabric that has right and wrong side. When you cut your fabric, you want to make sure that you have an even number of left side pieces and an even number of right side pieces. And the way you get the right side piece is you flip the template over. And the template is in my project package, or it explains how you just basically make one yourself. If you would rather make one out of template plastic or a different size from the two that I've provided in my project sheet. you don't want to make the braid pieces really, really long. I think that might look awkward. The piece that I provided too in my project sheet, the piece that I'm using, the template that I'm using in my prayer shawl is 6.5 inches long. And the template that I used for the podcast quilt is 5 inches by 2.5 inches because I just used a charm pack, which, as you know, charm packs are 5-inch squares. And the way that I actually made that template, as a matter of fact, was to use the cardboard back of the charm pack. I cut it in half. I cut off the 45-degree angle at the end, which made a little triangle. And then what I was left with was the exact template that I used to cut my pieces from the charm pack. So you can try doing that, or if you don't have a charm pack and you just want to use that size, go ahead and print off my project sheet. And I do have both sizes of templates, the 6.5 and the 5-inch. Now, I gave a tutorial for the friendship quilt portion. That's a separate tutorial from the checkerboard border, because the checkerboard border is something you may or may not want to add. It is a little bit different, and I thought I would make two separate tutorials rather than just tell you how to make one single quilt, because I think the checkerboard border is something you could use in any kind of circumstance. I really liked doing it. It is 1-inch squares, and so it's a little bit fussy in the sense that you've got a lot of little intersections to make sure that you match, especially if you're using highly contrasting fabrics. I used black and white fabrics, obviously, if you look at the picture. And so I needed to make sure that all my intersections meet. Now, when my son was home from school last Sunday, and I showed him the quilt and I said, "And see how everything matches?" Well, he is a perfectionist and he looked at it really closely and he said, "Not quite. And you know what? It's off by maybe a thread or two here and there." That child, I think I'm going to give him a spanking. So there is a separate tutorial for the checkerboard. And it's, like I said, very tricky to make, but it's really beautiful border on a quilt. Obviously, you don't need to stick to black and white, but you need, I recommend that you use two fabrics that are quite contrasting. Now, I have three rules that you must follow, and these are in the tutorial. So you'll have them printed when you look at the tutorial. I also have them on the blog because these are three very important rules, and I'm going to say them out loud too. That way you'll understand that they're very important because I'm going to say them three times. Number one, you need to make sure that the width and height measurement of the center of your quilt to which you're going to add the checkerboard border are both either even or odd numbers plus 1/2 inch. For instance, you want the center of your quilt to be, say, 12 inches by 16 inches plus 1/2 inch. So it would be 12.5 by 16.5. Or you want it to be, say, 15.5 by 19.5. You want both of those numbers to be either even or odd plus that 1/2 inch. Because if you don't have them both be even or odd, your checkerboard will not match all the way around the quilt. You'll have two whites sitting next to each other and it will no longer be a checkerboard. The second rule to making a checkerboard border on a quilt is to make sure that you use an exact 1/4 inch seam allowance. That is so essential to make sure everything matches perfectly. Now, I know you are all perfect seamstresses or sewers if you're a guy. Seamster? I wonder if that's a word, seamster. At any rate, I know you sew your seams perfect 1/4 inches, right? Well, in this case, you really do need to maintain that perfect 1/4 inch so your checkerboard's squares are exactly 1 inch so that they will be able to match your center block perfectly. Rule number 3, make sure when sewing on the borders that the checkerboard pattern is maintained around the entire border. That's pretty easy to do and it makes sense, but don't get sewing your border and think you're going to sew it on and not pay attention to make sure that your squares are alternating black, white, black, white. That's so important. I had to resew one of my borders twice because I didn't pay attention. I was kind of on autopilot. If you remember last podcast, I mentioned about being on autopilot. Well, this particular evening, I probably was maybe a little bit too tired. I was on autopilot and I had to rip the same border off twice because I wasn't paying attention to the black, white rule of the checkerboard. So I hope you give the checkerboard border a try, whether you use it with the friendship braid or maybe a quilt block of your own design. That's up to you, but it's a very, very pretty border. very effective and really not all that hard to do. You just need to kind of be paying attention when you're doing it. Links to both the friendship braid tutorial and the checkerboard quilt border tutorial are on the website. After I finished the quilt top, I was debating how I was going to quilt the wall hanging, and I decided to highlight the way that the dark red color, when they met, they kind of made heart shapes. If you look at the quilt top, you'll see what I mean. Where the dark reds met, they sort of looked like hearts. So I just used echo quilting in each dark red heart area. And then for the checkerboard, I thought I would sew buttons in some of the white squares. And I really wanted to use heart-shaped buttons, but I went to the store and holy cow, buttons are so expensive, especially considering how many I was going to end up having to use on my little, and this was a small wall quilt. But then I had this brainstorm. I could make my own buttons using polymer clay. Now, I've done this in the past, making buttons to go with various shirts that I've made for my husband. And I promise I'll share the technique with you in a future podcast. My podcast today is so full of stuff. I did not have time to put the tutorial for how to make polymer clay buttons, but I promise you that I will offer that in an upcoming podcast. Suffice it to say, I ended up making enough buttons for my quilt for a fraction of the cost of buying them, and they're one of a kind. I've put a close-up on the blog so you can see what I mean about the buttons. Remember, you can download both of the free tutorials from my website. Just go to mirkwooddesigns.com. Stay tuned for the paper arts segment. Today's project ties in nicely with the recipe I'm presenting, which is luscious chocolate truffles. But first, in the paper arts segment, I'm providing templates to make two little boxes to hold truffles. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Mirkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. I'm Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zaroff, and in today's paper arts segment, I will provide two templates to make little boxes to hold truffles or other candy. You can find complete instructions on the website, mirkwooddesigns.com. There are so many beautiful decorative papers and cardstocks available now that you can use for these boxes. All you do is make sure that they're the right size for your printer. For example, I buy whole packs of the 12-inch paper that's used for scrap or cardstock, well actually cardstock and paper that's used for scrapbooking, and I cut the sheets down. I do have a wide carriage printer, so I can always print on 12-inch sheets. However, when I'm testing out projects for the podcast, most people don't have a wide carriage printer. They usually just have a regular printer that holds 8.5 by 11-inch paper, and so I cut my large sheets down to fit my printer. To fit 8.5 by 11, I should say. And all you do is you print on the wrong side of the paper. And voila, you have boxes that are ready to fold together. Rather than taking the time, if you're in a big hurry, rather than having to take the time to decorate the cardstock yourself, if you print on some of this really marvelous scrapbooking cardstock, you'll be all set. If you look at the pictures that I have on my blog of the two boxes, those were printed from cardstock pack. I think I might have gotten at Michael's or Joann's, and it fit right in my printer. It printed off beautifully, and I'm very pleased with the results. So then all you need to do is take your craft knife or your scissors and cut out the template, fold on the dotted lines, and then just fold the boxes together. Now, for the bonbon box, all you need is scissors or a craft knife and, of course, the template printed out. For the trapezoid box, you'll also need a hole punch or anything that you can use to punch hole in the box. You could use, say, an awl if you don't have a punch to use. Glue and ribbon. Remember that you can decorate the boxes any way you like. If you didn't print it on decorative paper, you can use rubber stamps, stickers, or whatever. And if you're using the boxes to hold the truffles you make in today's recipe segment, you'll also need little bits of regular wrapping paper, tissue wrapping paper, to crumple in the bottom. And this serves two purposes. Number one, it raises the truffles up slightly off the base of the box, and it also kind of holds them in place when you are giving the box as a gift. There is a link to the truffle box project sheet on the website, along with photos of the truffle boxes. Up next is the recipe segment, and today we're making luscious chocolate truffles that you can put in the boxes that you've just made. I'll be right back. Welcome back to Merkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. I'm Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zaroff, and this is the recipe segment. Today, I'm offering my recipe for luscious chocolate truffles. When Teddy was in seventh grade, he wanted to give a special Christmas gift to his teachers. We debated what he could give them and came up with truffles. This is a recipe that I've modified from his original one, but it's fairly similar. Truffles are incredibly easy to make. If a 12-year-old boy can make them by himself, so can you. I'm being honest when I say that Teddy made these himself. I did not help. I remember sitting at the kitchen table talking with him as he worked, and I showed him where things were in the kitchen. I did, however, help him come up with a way to package the end product. I think that packaging is very important, so together we designed a label, and we used boxes that I had bought at the dollar store. Each box held several layers of truffles, and in between each layer we put a square of cardstock and a paper doily to protect the truffles and to also make a professional-looking presentation. On the website you can see a photo of Teddy's truffle presentation, and also you can see a photo of the four truffles, the four styles of truffles. No, it's not really styles. They're all the same style. The four coatings that I put on the truffles that I'm offering in the recipe today. To make the actual truffle center itself, you need only three ingredients, and they are good quality chocolate, heavy cream, and vanilla extract. That is all you need to make truffles. Now, obviously, you're going to add coatings to that, but I'll talk about that in a minute. Because chocolate is pretty much the sole ingredient in this recipe, you want to use the best chocolate you can buy. Sure, you can use Nestle's chocolate chips, but I strongly recommend you buy, at a minimum, something like Ghirardelli. I tend to like Scharfenberger, or I also like Calibo, which is a really lovely French chocolate, and they're both so rich and so decadent. I really love them. For this recipe, or for my podcast and the recipe tutorial and the pictures, I did use Ghirardelli because it's pretty much available at any store. And you also have your choice of using milk chocolate, bittersweet or semi-sweet chocolate, or a combination of the two. And I need to stress that you absolutely must not use unsweetened baker's chocolate. That is a completely different thing, and it's completely wrong for this recipe. Again, stick with milk chocolate or with semi-sweet or bittersweet chocolate. Semi-sweet and bittersweet chocolate are the same thing. Different companies just call them different things. And higher end chocolates, like Valrhona, you can get different percentages of cocoa. And I'm thinking that the bittersweet or semi-sweet is 60% cocoa. So stick to nothing more than that. You want to stick to a little bit milder chocolate, because these are very intense if you use all bittersweet. If you use anything stronger than 60%, they'll be maybe a little bit too bitter for a lot of people you might give them to, although you might like that. If you're going to eat them yourself, make them any way you want. Now, the coatings that I used for this particular recipe, there were things I had around the house. So I used confectioner's sugar, also called powdered sugar. I used dry cocoa powder. You can use hot chocolate powder. It doesn't really make a difference. All you're doing is you're coating the chocolate ganache, the actual center itself, with something to make it a little bit more finished looking. I used ground nuts. In my case, I used walnuts because that's what I had on hand. But think of the possibilities. You could use ground peanuts. Ground pistachios would be so pretty because of the green color. They would be really pretty. Macadamia nuts. Any kind of nut you could think of, you could just grind. And you want to use not like ground so much that it's a meal, although you could do that. But I like the way it looks when it's a little bit chunkier on the outside of the chocolate. And finally, I toasted coconut. I love toasted coconut, and to use that as the coating on this was just, to me, perfect. So those are the ingredients. Now you'll also need little paper cups. They kind of look like mini muffin cups, and that might be the same size, but I bought mine at a candy supply store, and they just basically look like cupcake cups. You know, the paper cupcake liners, but they're a lot smaller because each of your truffles is going to be about an inch in diameter. So go to the store and take a look for mini muffin cups. I think they might be the right size. And you need to do that because you don't want them all sticking together in a big clump, because chocolate has a tendency to melt at warm temperatures. And if you just stick them together in a box without separating them by paper, they're going to be a big melted clump. And that's not a lovely presentation. You can see the photos of my truffle making process on the blog, and I really hope, if you haven't tried any of my other recipes, come on people, you need three ingredients for this. Super simple. My 12-year-old son made it without my intervention. Give these a try. Now, the actual process of making them takes no time at all, but there are two steps during the process where you need to refrigerate the chocolate. So allow yourself probably, I'm thinking an hour from start to finish, maybe an hour and a half, and from the actual process of making the chocolate stuff to ending up with your pretty truffles in a box, including actually folding your little truffle boxes. And you know what's really sad? I'm going to tell you something. I'm not entirely sure. First of all, I need to go back and talk about the recipe again. When you're done making your truffles, they should be refrigerated because they do contain heavy cream. But when you serve them, bring them to room temperature before you eat them. Okay, now with what I was going to say a second ago. You know what's really sad? I have not tried even one of my truffles. I'm not sure if I ever mentioned this, but chocolate and I don't really agree. I grew up with all of my friends saying, oh, chocolate this, chocolate that, it's so wonderful, it's so sexy, oh, I get such a high when I have chocolate. It's an aphrodisiac. Well, you know what I get from eating chocolate? I get a headache and I sneeze. That's just not fair. I don't understand why I can't get the high that everybody gets from chocolate. I feel really left out. When I was growing up, I'd eat chocolate and I'd expect to feel this fabulous high everybody talked about. And it never happened for me. It's so sad. Anyway, I feel really cheated about that. But don't let my peculiarity to stop you from enjoying these fabulous truffles. You'll find the recipe along with all of the show notes on my website, mirkwooddesigns.com. Up next is the grab bag. This time I'm going to get mushy and tell a couple of true love stories. And I'm going to also share the most beautiful love song I have ever heard. Welcome back to Mirkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. I'm Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zaroff, and this is The Grab Bag. Okay, now here's the mushy segment of today's podcast. I'm going to tell you two love stories, which I sincerely hope I can get through without too many tears, and then I'll share the song that I mentioned. My husband's mother is not well and frequently has to spend months in a nursing facility because my elderly father-in-law can't give her the level of care that she requires. He spends nearly every waking hour at the nursing home and he takes meals to her. One day, my husband and I accompanied Pops to visit Mom, and as usual, Pops took a meal he had made for her. When we arrived, he arranged her in her bed, set up a table next to her. He arranged the food carefully on the table, and he sat down across from her. As soon as he sat and gazed across the table at Mom, it was as if the entire world melted away, as though they were the only two people in that little room, just the two of them, still young, and still deeply in love. Similar to my husband, I am so blessed to have the family that I do. I know so many people whose families don't get along for one reason or another. I was blessed with two loving parents who were married for 54 years, and that's where I learned about true love. Not the giddy puppy love or mushy romantic love, but deep, abiding, selfless, mature love. I strive to follow their example in my own marriage. My father was ill the last 3 years of his life, and my mother cared for him. Even when he didn't know who she was there at his side, still caring for his every need, providing every comfort, simply loving him. When they took their wedding vows, she really meant the words, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health. The song The Dutchman was one of my dad's favorite songs that I'd sing. I've sung this song for 35 years, and I never truly understood the depth of the lyrics until I saw them lived out in my parents. This song was composed by American singer-songwriter Michael Peter Smith. I had the honor of working tech on a show that he wrote called Personals. I know that he wouldn't remember me, but I certainly remember him and his beautiful music. I am honored to be granted permission to share it with you today. Here's the legal stuff. The lyrics and music of this song were written by Michael Peter Smith and published by Bird Avenue Publishing, ASCAP. I'll put the link to his website on my blog. Michael Peter Smith's music is available for download on iTunes under the name Michael Smith, but don't get him confused with the myriad other Michael Smiths out there. These are the albums on which he sings The Dutchman: Michael Smith Love Stories, Songbook Volume 4, Paradise Lost and Found, Such Things Are Finally Done, Tribute to Steve Goodman, and Anthology. If you search for the name Michael Smith and then look up these six albums, you'll know that that's the right guy. And here's the song, The Dutchman. The Dutchman's not the kind of man to keep his thumb jammed in the dam that holds his dreams in. But that's a secret only Margaret knows. When Amsterdam is golden in the morning, Margaret brings him breakfast. She believes him. He thinks the tulips bloom beneath the snow. He's mad as he can be, but Margaret only sees that sometimes. Sometimes she sees her unborn children in his eyes. The Dutchman still wears wooden shoes. His cap and coat are patched with love that Margaret sewed in. Sometimes he thinks he's still in Rotterdam. He watches tugboats down canals and calls out to them when he thinks he knows the captain. Till Margaret comes to take him home again through unforgiving streets that trip him, though she holds his arm. Sometimes he thinks that he's alone and calls her name. Let us go to the banks of the ocean, where the walls rise above the Zuider Zee. Long ago, I used to be a young man, and dear Margaret remembers that for me. The windmills whirl the winter in. She winds his muffler tighter. They sit in the kitchen. Some tea with whiskey keeps away the dew. He sees her for a moment, calls her name. She makes his bed up, humming some old love song. She learned it when the tune was very new. He hums a line or two, they hum together in the night. The Dutchman falls asleep, and Margaret blows the candle out. Let us go to the banks of the ocean, where the walls rise above the Zuider Zee. Long ago, I used to be a young man.
And dear Margaret remembers that for me.
I want to thank you for listening today, and I hope you continue to listen. Please email me or post comments on iTunes or on my blog to let me know what's on your mind. My email address is ruthann@mirkwooddesigns.com. I do hope to hear from you. You can find links to my podcasts, show notes, projects, and much more on my website, mirkwooddesigns.com. That's mirkwooddesigns.com. By the way, if you've missed a project, tutorial, or recipe, you can always go to my blog, and along the right column, there are links to both my projects page and my recipe page. Click on those to go directly to all of my projects, tutorials, and recipes without having to sift through the entire blog. And hey, don't forget about the reward for sending photos of your creations for my gallery. Check on the blog for information. Until next time, this is Ruth Ann Logsdon-Zeroff with Mirkwood Designs Adventures in Creativity. And remember, creativity isn't a race, it's an adventure.